Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I've got with me the ever youthful Peter Bai, and he is local VVA 218 chapter, Vietnam Veterans of America, board member and prez. And we are talking today something that I never thought I'd talk about, but it is in the world of antiques, and it is in the world of something beautiful. And I want everybody to think about this that's listening to me. Do you know what a Huey is? Do you guys know what a Huey is? Well, that's my brother-in-law's name, but it's also something really special if you're a Vietnam vet. And our chapter, our local chapter in Santa Barbara, has a Huey, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. But the crux of this show is I want to know if anyone can give Huey a home. We're going to talk a little bit with Peter Bai about Huey, how important that bird was to the vets, how they used the bird in service, and why we should keep it around. And I introduced to the show Peter Bai. And the interesting thing about Peter is that I've had him on the show a number of times, and he doesn't age. I mean, he just does not age. I've known him for 13 years. He stays the same. He doesn't age. And his voice is just beautiful. We've used him on the station a number of times for his gorgeous voice. And he's speaking to us from his pastorship at Summerlin Church. Peter, tell us what a Huey is, why it matters to you, what you did in the bird.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. I not only appreciate that, but you have flattered me beyond all expectations.
Yeah,
you might see true. That the cheeks are just a little bit red here this morning as you slightly embarrass me with all of your listeners and obviously all the viewers out there that will be watching this on the podcast and the video cast later on. And again, my thanks to you for having me on and recognizing our veterans chapter number 218 in Santa Barbara. To give you a little bit of background and why we're talking about a Huey helicopter today is that since about 1993, our chapter has had a Huey helicopter in its possession. And many folks have seen it in parades, when we've been on static displays. I think we've taken it up to the college several times, and it's been on display there. It's gone up to the Santa Ynez Valley, where it's been towed in a parade in Santa Ynez. We've had it out for Veterans Day on July 4th, and just about every major holiday of the year in which the crowds gather. But we have reached a point, and with a little bit of background as well, on the fact that this bird now must find a permanent home within Santa Barbara County. We have had the bird on loan to us from the Department of Defense and the division out of Lansing, Michigan, that loans out military equipment that's been taken out of service. And about a year or so ago, we were notified by them that while our bird has been sitting on a trailer and has been towed around to all these various events over these past 30 years, that is not what they want for the helicopter. And what they want is to have it displayed, perhaps on a pole, at a permanent location where it is visible to the public 24/7, protected from vandals, and then available for anyone to come at any time of the day or night to see the helicopter. So we have quite a challenge ahead of us, and we've just kicked off the campaign this week, and we were so, in a sense, the timing couldn't have been better for you to call me and have me be a part of this show.
So let me understand. So there's the head people in Lansing.
Yes.
Have said, okay, it's been on loan to you since 93, the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the helicopter, I read, it doesn't move, the engine's missing, et cetera. So
Yes. It's,
you know, it's not flyable. So you've got this helicopter. So the Lansing folks are saying, we want it back if you don't find a place that it could be on permanent display. Is that right?
Well, they're not saying they want it back. They're saying that they want it to be on public display. And if our chapter can't make that happen, then they will seek out another group or an organization that could make that happen. And as part of what we've been doing for the past year, really since March of 2022, we had been in contact with a Vietnam veterans group located in Nevada. And they said, yeah, we think we can do what the Department of Defense is requesting. But through their plans and figuring out how it would come to be, it all fell by the wayside. And they notified us that, no, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to display the bird. So we decided, let's redouble our efforts to see if, in fact, there can be a place for the helicopter to be properly displayed 24/7, 365 days a year. Now, I should back up a little bit and say, while the bird has been with us for all of these 30 years, it seems as though somewhere in the initial paperwork that came along with it, in the permission granted by the Department of Defense, was the language that said this helicopter is to be on permanent display, static-wise, and in reality, cannot be towed around on a trailer. So, and after COVID, as they were going through all of their paperwork in Lansing, they finally came around to contacting us. That does not mean that they were not aware years ago that the bird was on a trailer and was being towed around. It's just that they decided, now, you know what? We need to let this organization know that this is not the proper display of the bird.
Why do you think that is? Do you think they're thinking, well, it's not a serious enough outlet to have it be in parades and, you know, touched by school children en route? Do they think that perhaps it should have a more sanctified?
Well, that is, you will use the word sanctified. That is the way they also view the display of the bird. In other words, they don't want people sitting inside the aircraft. They don't want people climbing in and out of it. If it is going to be something that represents the service and sacrifice of so many people so many decades ago, no, we don't want it to be like a toy that you can just tow around to places. That's not its purpose. Its purpose is to be revered, to be honored, and so therefore, it has to be in a place where you can do that.
I get it.
So we understand, and we're disappointed and a bit frustrated, but if that is what needs to be done, that's what needs to be done. And so what we're doing now is turning to the public all over Santa Barbara County and putting the word out there that we are in search of a site, we are in search of an organization that can take the bird, again, on loan, because no one actually owns the bird the army does. So it's a loner, but it has to be properly displayed. And it also means that the organization will be taking that bird in perpetuity. It's not just to be displayed for 4 or 5 years, then taken down off the pole, if you will, and moved to another spot. The DOD and the Lansing organization wants to make sure it's permanent where it is. It will be taken care of year in and year out. If it may need a new paint job, if something has happened to, let's say, some part of it that has to be repaired, you've got to be responsible for that. And initially, of course, there will be help from our veterans organization in making sure that that happens. Now, the average age of Vietnam veterans is quickly approaching 74, 75 years of age.
Right.
There will be a time when none of us vets will be here to take care of the bird. So when we say in perpetuity, that's what we mean. It's going to have to be there for a long, long time. And it is a challenge because we'll need to raise monies. And it is also a challenge in finding the proper site, that number one, and the organization that meets the rules and requirements of the Department of Defense.
I want to ask you, maybe when we come back from the break, Peter, I'm trying to think, what if I was on the board, your board, and we were all sitting around discussing this, I'm trying to think what kind of organization I would put in my mind that I would want to target. And I'm thinking, well, is it relatable to, say, a 501c3 not-for-profit organization such as the zoo? Is it something that you would liaise with a transportation organization like our carriage museum? You know, what is the tie? What's the analogy? What's the metaphor? You know, what would in your board's mind, what would make a good linkage, a proper linkage to satisfy the Department of the Defense that it was in a suitable sanctioned, in all the uses of the word sanctioned, place? Yeah, think about that when we get back from the break. Hey, Richard, I saw you come in and there you are. Okay. Why don't we go to quick break? And when we get back, I really want to hear from Peter what sort of organization he's thinking of when he's thinking of a permanent home and what the commitment would look like monetarily. Of course, it's hard to imagine, but what that commitment would look like. And I think about this, Peter, it's like now that, especially in our area, Santa Barbara, Montecito, land is so expensive, you know, it's like that thing is large. How do you figure that out? Okay, let's go to quick break. It's a wonderful, I think about my grandson, Peter, the Aerospace Museum in San Diego, and how that's his favorite mm-hmm. museum. And they do have cockpit displays.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his favorite thing in the entire universe. And it's a really important thing to have young people look at such a thing and understand the role of such a thing. And that's another topic I want to talk about. This thing coming down over 50 years ago, you know, the kind of feelings that it engendered as you were in country. I would love to hear your impressions of that. Hey, Richard, let's go to quick break. We get back from the break. We are starting a campaign, dear listener. Huey Needs a Home. If anybody's got a good idea, I want them to take this number down. This is Ed Foster. Ed is in this with Peter. And Ed is going to be reachable at 805-770-0979. He is anxious to hear if anybody's got any ideas for where to keep a treasured memorial, which is a whole helicopter. Call Ed if you have an idea. We'll get back from the break. Peter's going to tell us a few things about the logistics, what the organization's profile might look like that Peter's got in mind, and also Peter's feelings about seeing that thing well over 50 years ago coming down as he was serving. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. I know you're not good for me, but free of
something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's
wounded
that sound?
And trying to save some of the
welcome
wounded
back industry. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I'm talking with Peter Bai, and we are searching for a permanent home for a Vietnam era helicopter, and these helicopters were lovingly called Hueys. So our chapter, which is 218 of the Vietnam Veterans of America, our chapter has had this bird since 93.
Mm-hmm.
And they were told by the, this is a really interesting story. They were told by the Department of Defense that it was not the appropriate display of the bird helicopter to march it down the street in a parade. It wasn't the proper setting.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted a place that was conducive to the memory of what that war was, and the people that lost their lives in the war. So they wanted something a little more serious, a more. And then I put to Peter this question. What would an organization, according to the folks that are in 218, what do they envision? What kind of organization do you envision might end up?
Well, with the rules and regs that have to be followed from the Department of Defense, it could be a municipality or a city that could take it on. It could be a like veterans or veterans affiliated organization. And it also could be placed perhaps on a private piece of land, but the requirement is that must be open to visitors 24/7. So you're going to have a place that has not only the space for that, but also accommodation for, let's say, if a small road has to be built to the site. And of course, the helicopter mounted on something, we would hope that it would be mounted on a pole so that it appears to be in flight, as you may have seen helicopter displays all around the country, in which most of them are up on a pole, and usually at a very slight angle so that it looks like it's flying. And also a site that offers some quiet for meditation and remembrance. One thing that comes to mind is, you know, maybe it is in some place a little north of Goleta, or it's at a quiet spot in Santa Barbara, or it could be in Carpinteria. It could also be up in the valley, perhaps near Santa Maria, or somewhere around Buellton or Solvang. But again, it's going to have to be in a spot that the Department of Defense has to sign off on. They have to sign off on the receiving organization to know that they've met all the requirements. And so it is a bit of a challenge. There's no doubt about that. And we want the bird to stay within Santa Barbara County. And it is an icon of the war, but now in today's jargon, if you will, it is a monument.
Yeah.
And as you go to any monuments around the country, most of them are situated in places where it is quiet. You don't have any street traffic going by for the most part.
Right.
And some places it's at a cemetery. Yeah. And it's placed in a very special part. You mentioned the Santa Barbara Zoo before. I'm not sure that would qualify, but if there was a quiet part in the zoo, that might be doable. But again, it has to be available 24 hours a day for the public to come by and view it.
I wonder why that is. Is it okay? So how I'm thinking about this, being an art person, I'm thinking of, for example, public art, where, you know, public art is there, it's in the street, it is available because it's in the street 24/7. Mm-hmm. It can be seen 24/7. You know, it's part of the infrastructure, the part of the architecture of the town, of the street. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of it in terms of public art, but I'm wondering why that is the case with the DOD, because it's sort of like, well, all right, so in my mind, let's say you have a wealthy benefactor who maybe served, who has a lot of land, mm-hmm. and he says, or she says, you know, I have a back acreage and I'm willing mm-hmm. to do a little road there. But at the same time, the 24/7 part, that sort of throws me, because I can't think of, you know, the aerospace museum that I mentioned in San Diego and other museums like this, they're not 24/7, and they've got some iconic, mm-hmm. you know, iconic things that they're stored there, but I wonder why they do that. Why do you think that is 24/7?
I think because they want to make it available to anyone who wants to come by and look at it or sees it from, you know, maybe several, you know, thousand feet away and say, well, I see a helicopter there, I'd like to go visit it. And the other thing too is, you know, there are a number of other locations to think about too. Is there a possibility of a site at the Santa Barbara Airport? And it seems like a logical place to put the helicopter, but would the city accept that? Would the airport commission accept that? Would we be working with the city council and other organizations and agencies within the city? Would the city of Lompoc take it on? There's another obvious place. It might be up near Space Force, you know, near Vandenberg. Avenue of the Flags near Buellton. Right. It has to be in a place, again, and I know this, and you see, this difficulty in the criteria means that our search for a place around here and within the county, it all hinges on that. More, you know, more than raising the money for the actual construction of the site is the site itself. Where will it be that there is fairly easy access by the public to get to it, to spend time with it? And we know that we can secure it. There's no problem with that. But it has to be in a spot where anybody and everybody can see it.
I get it. How interesting. You know, when we get back from the break, I want to have 5 minutes with you talking about your direct experiences with such a craft, with a Huey, as you were in Vietnam serving. I want to hear that. And I also, I said, now, dear listener, this is a weird thing, but I think I had a dream about, because Peter is, of course, speaking to us from his church, Summerlin Church. And I think I put those two together and I was thinking, okay, I wonder if there were ever chaplains that, you know, flew and did services or ministered, and they were carried by the Hueys. And Peter mentioned that there were such people. We are starting a campaign, dear listener. Huey needs a home. If anybody's got a good idea, I want them to take this number down. This is Ed Foster. Ed is in this with Peter. And Ed is going to be reachable at 805-770-0979. He is anxious to hear if anybody's got any ideas for where to keep a treasured memorial, which is a whole helicopter. Call Ed if you have an idea. We get back from the break. Peter's going to tell us a few things about the logistics, what the organization's profile might look like that Peter's got in mind, and also Peter's feelings about seeing that thing well over 50 years ago coming down as he was serving. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute.
Rose! You there? Yeah.
Welcome back to the Stewart and with Peter Bai, and we're talking about a helicopter fascinated with this story, but there's it is in the possession of VVA 218, our local chapter. Peter Bai and Ed Foster are chairing a campaign to find this helicopter. Oh, by the way, what's the dimensions, Peter, of the bird?
It's about 40. Tall? About 40 feet long and about 15 feet high, roughly. So, and I should mention
40
that
feet long and 50 feet high. I mean, I hope the airport says yes. That would be so cool. They've got some wonderful public art there, and I'm thinking of this in terms of the public art, and also, you know, the airport is sort of an icon, I believe. We are starting a campaign, dear listener. Huey needs a home. If anybody's got a good idea, I want them to take this number down. This is Ed Foster. Ed is in this with Peter. And Ed is going to be reachable at 805-770-0979. He is anxious to hear if anybody's got any ideas for where to keep a treasured memorial, which is a whole helicopter. Call Ed if you have an idea. We'll get back from the break. Peter's going to tell us a few things about the logistics, what the organization's profile might look like that Peter's got in mind, and also Peter's feelings about seeing that thing well over 50 years ago coming down as he was serving. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. And we are launching a campaign for a permanent home helicopter that served. And Peter is with the chapter of DVA 218. I wonder if your helicopter, what's a personal story from you about this?
Well, I had been in Vietnam for a year, from June of 67 to June of 68, and was at a point expecting that I would be rotating back to the States after my one-year tour, which was typical for so many people. But being young, dumb, and maybe a little bit stupid, I decided to extend my tour for another 6 months and went home on leave. And eventually got my orders as I was going to return to Vietnam that I would be joining up with the 1st Air Cavalry, which was at that time posted in the northern part of South Vietnam. And I had also indicated that, you know, I just wanted to be on choppers. Didn't make any difference to me what I did. And so there was a very accommodating sergeant in the personnel office at the time before I had left. Said, no problem. I know exactly the unit, and I know they have a spot for you. And as it turned out, I was assigned as a door gunner with 8th Troop, 1st to the 9th. And for the next 6 months, flew as a door gunner. I was the one that would be on the right-hand side of the bird. When we recollect what was going on, you know, everybody has their own personal story. For those that, you know, served in country, and even those that were serving out of the country during the Vietnam era, a very tumultuous time stateside, and a very, at times, confusing situation in Vietnam itself. And we would fly sorties, we would bring troops out into operational areas, come back and pick them up at the end of the day. We would fly support. We called them ash and trash runs. We would go get anything from food and bring it out. We would, you know, whatever was necessary. And we flew sorties all the time. But my recollections are of just wanting to take care of the troops that were in the field. You know, we had, in a sense, we were the lucky ones. After we were situated and the troops got out into the field, we left. So we got to go back to the base and then wait until basically what would be the call for the end of the day to go out. And we may have had other missions to do during the daytime. So they had the hard part. Once we left them off, they were there. If there was need for medevacs, which a lot of our birds did, then we went out and picked up the wounded and tried to bring everybody else home. And life, you know, could be boring one day, and then all hell could break loose the next. So you never knew what you were going to get from day to day. And I recall we had, you know, a situation several times where we flew in, and it was very quiet as we were flying. And in fact, what we were hearing is that there didn't seem to be any reason to not think that it would be a typical landing and we would get out of there in a matter of minutes or so. But on one mission, we actually flew in to what turned out to be an ambush, and we took a lot of wounded and a couple of KIAs, and our bird was pretty well shot up. And by the time we got back to the medevac area and got guys into the hospital, under the field hospital and stuff, our bird essentially just shut down. It wouldn't fly anymore. But more importantly, to all of those that were there, this was your transportation around the country for the most part. So it didn't make any difference who you were, if you were just going to another unit or maybe you were flying out to go on RR somewhere. You got on one of these birds, whether it was ours or somebody else's, and some cases, the bigger Chinooks, which were the big twin engine ones, and they took you back. And the sound of this bird, which most people are familiar with, if you've seen a Huey go by, just has that, you know, whoomp, whoomp, whoomp as it's going. It really has stuck with me, as it has with so many others that serve. You never forget that sound. And for a lot of troops in the field, when you heard those choppers coming at the end of the day, you knew you were going back to the base. And that was an audible sign that things were going to be okay. You're going to get out of there that day. But, you know, these birds served their purpose in so many different ways. As Pilot Joe Donnelly has said, you know, over the rivers, over the mountains, over the treetops in some cases, flying into areas that were under fire, bringing people out. It was a safety net for some folks. It was transportation, knowing you were going to either back to Saigon, back to Cameron Bay, back to Da Nang, and the next day you were going to be flying out on what we call freedom birds. You were going home. So it remains that. I'm sorry?
I said, that's beautiful. It's marvelous. I'm sitting here listening, getting a picture. Peter, we got to go to quick break. Richard's standing by telling us we have to do a quick station ID. So when we get back, I want to introduce your wife to the program, Melinda Bai, and I want to introduce Melinda. She's a client of mine, and she's got a new venture starting. I think it's quite beautiful, and I want to talk to her about her new magazine, Cannabis by the Sea, A little bit of a change here, but this is, we're keeping within the same family. Melinda Bai will join us when we get back from the break. Richard, let's go to quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk to Melinda about her new venture, a lifestyle magazine dedicated to information on the health and wellness properties of cannabis. How cool is that? Started the month after COVID hit. Don't turn that dial. Back in a minute.
Dirty old part of the city where the sun refused to shine. People tell me there ain't no use in trying. Now, my girl, you're so young and pretty, and one thing I know is true.
If you did, welcome back to Delicious Food. I'm talking with Nearby. And we're talking about the campaign to find a home for a 40-foot-long helicopter, and that's the Huey. And Peter, will you give us some information on who to contact if we've got any ideas or if even we want to give some money?
Our main contact person is a Huey chopper pilot himself. That's Ed Foster, one of the members of our chapter. You can call Ed at 805-770-0979. And don't worry, I'll give you the full information in just a second. You can go to our website, which is vvachapter218.org/Huey. Look for all the information and the requirements that we're going to have to meet. And if you would like to donate, you can also do that on the chapter website, vvachapter218.org/donate. My thanks to Richard for picking the most appropriate music, and my thanks to you, Elizabeth. And as we move forward on this, we hope to keep all of your listeners informed on what's happening. Thank you.
Excellent. So I want to introduce Peter's wife, Melinda. And Melinda Bai has a new venture. And Melinda, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. Will you tell us a little bit about the impetus behind Cannabis by the Sea?
Cannabis by the Sea magazine was founded 4/20/2020, right in the middle of our big lockdown. Basically, it was founded by a friend of mine and two other women to advocate for local growers and dispensaries, but the magazine developed. That group shut down. I took over the magazine because I loved the idea that we could, educate the masses on the benefits of cannabis. All kinds of, whether it's CBD, THC, CBN, all the different forms of cannabis and how it can help, and try to eliminate some of the stigma around and the archaic beliefs of cannabis.
Exactly. It's interesting. So my mom is 94, Linda, and we've all told her, and she's having trouble eating. She has no appetite. And we keep on saying, we've got something for you here. But what was interesting, I was looking at the magazine online. There's all sorts of things. I mean, lest you think that it's, just celebrating the growers, et cetera, although it does, and the dispensaries. There's also lifestyle things, foods, for example, and sleep aids and topical things that, it's really cool. This has happened so fast in our world, in my mind, Melinda, that there's been, so much growth in this industry, and it's so cool that you're part of that. The spring issue is now available now. Is that correct? And people can also subscribe?
Correct. You go to our website at cbtsmagazine.com, and you can, it's a free subscription, and that will, you'll automatically get our eBlast notices that the issue is available. We publish seasonally, so essentially quarterly. Spring is out now, and our summer issue will come out June 20th. And we have room for advertising as well. We have very competitive rates. And the more, of course, the more advertising we get, the more print copies we can get out there, because we really love print copies, because the magazine really is so pretty. The layouts are great. The colors are really vibrant. We use local photographers, people we know. And we really pride ourselves on our interviews. We've got some great ones coming up. And you'll learn a lot. You will learn a lot, and you will learn how cannabis can help you in one way or another, whether it's a topical cream with CBD in it to help with arthritis, which it absolutely does, or whether it's an edible to help you sleep, whether it's something to help relieve pain if you're going through arthritis pain. You can take an edible if you don't smoke. If you don't mind smoking or vaping, you can do that too. And we also deeply encourage our readers to, if you've never used cannabis in any form, to go to a dispensary, go to your local dispensary, and talk to a bud tender and tell them not only how you want to feel or what you're trying to treat, but how you don't want to feel.
Huh.
If you don't want to feel high, tell them that. I don't want to feel high. I don't want to feel stone, however you phrase it. Tell them how you don't want to feel. And they are so educated, and they know so much, and they will help you. It's not an exact science, and it will never be an exact science until it's legalized and we're able to do federal testing and, et cetera on it. But it's becoming far more precise. And I would just encourage anybody to go to a dispensary. They're so clean. And they're so lovely, and it's like going into a perfumery. they're beautiful stores, and very educated and great people.
I want to know, Melinda, you say you've got a couple of really cool interviews coming up in the magazine. Might you tell us about those?
We will have one with Mona. She's the owner of Ocean's Dispensary in Lompoc, and she has been battling severe cancer for a number of years, and in the midst of all of it has one of the biggest dispensaries in Lompoc. And it's also the only consumption lounge between Los Angeles and San Francisco, meaning you can purchase product there and consume it on the premises, whereas you cannot do that at any dispensary. You can't do that. She's fascinating. She was born in Australia, used to work with Qantas, really interesting woman. We also anticipate having an interview with Mary Bailey, who is the director of the Last Prisoner Project, and they advocate for the release of prisoners who have been incarcerated for nonviolent cannabis crimes, some serving 40 to 50 years, even life sentences, for completely nonviolent cannabis possession. I'm not talking about trafficking, hundreds of pounds of cannabis. I'm talking about just simple possession. And so they're quite an organization.
Very interesting. Yeah, I always wondered about that. It's like, okay. And Melinda, just very quickly, we've got a minute left. Will you tell us how people can get in touch with the magazine?
Visit our website at CBTS, Cannabis by the Sea, CBTSmagazine.com.
Excellent, and thank you, and my love to you, and good luck with the magazine, and also, will you give your husband a kiss for me, and let's hope we find a home for Huey.
You bet I will, and thank you so much for getting the word out about the Huey. I know we greatly appreciate that.
Okay, bye. Thank you both.
Thank you, sweetie.